A late afternoon during the bitterly cold Christmas week of 1945, Oppenheimer visited Isidore Robbie in his New York City apartment on Riverside Drive. Watching the sunset from Robbie's living room window, the two old friends could see ice floes bathed in yellow and pink floating down the Hudson River. Afterwards, the two men sat alone in the spreading darkness, smoking their pipes and talking about the dangers of an atomic arms race. Robbie later claimed that he originated the idea of international control and that Oppie became its salesman. Oppenheimer, of course, had been thinking along these lines ever since his talks with Bohr at Los Alamos. But perhaps their conversation that evening inspired Oppie to refine those ideas into a concrete plan. "So it came to me," Robbie recalled, "there must be two things. It, the bomb, must be under international control, because if it was under national control, there was bound to be rivalry. We also believed in nuclear energy, that the continuation of this industrial age would depend on it." Robbie and Oppenheimer thus proposed an international atomic authority that would have real clout because it would control both the bomb and peaceful uses of atomic energy. Potential proliferators would face the certain penalty of a punitive closing down of their energy plants if they were found to be acquiring atomic weapons. 4 weeks later, in late January 1946, Oppenheimer was heartened to learn that negotiations begun several months earlier had resulted in an agreement among the Soviet Union, the United States, and other countries to establish a United Nations Atomic Energy Commission. In response, President Truman appointed a special committee to draw up a concrete proposal for international control of nuclear weapons. Dean Acheson was to chair the committee, and other members included such leading lights of the American foreign policy establishment as former Assistant Secretary of War John J. McCloy, Vannevar Bush, James Conant, and General Leslie Groves. When Acheson complained to his personal assistant, Herbert Marks, that he knew nothing about atomic energy, Marks suggested he create a board of consultants. A brilliant and gregarious young lawyer, Marks had once worked for David Lilienthal, the chairman of the Tennessee Valley Authority, and now he suggested that Lilienthal could help to devise a coherent plan. Though not a scientist, Lilienthal, a liberal New Dealer, was an experienced administrator who had worked with hundreds of engineers and technicians. He would bring gravitas to their deliberations. He quickly agreed to chair the board of consultants, and four other men were appointed to join him: Chester I. Barnard, president of New Jersey Bell Telephone Company; Dr. Charles A. Thomas, vice president of Monsanto Chemical Company; Harry A. Wynn, vice president of General Electric Company; and Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer was delighted with this development. Here, at last, was the opportunity he had been awaiting to address the major problems associated with controlling the atomic bomb. Acheson's committee and his board of consultants began meeting intermittently that winter to sketch out a preliminary plan. As the only physicist, Oppenheimer naturally dominated the discussions and impressed these strong-minded men with his clarity and his vision. He needed unanimity, and he was determined to get it. Right from the start, he enthralled Lilienthal. They met for the first time in Oppenheimer's hotel room at Washington's Shoreham Hotel. He walked back and forth, Lilienthal noted in his diary, making funny hue sounds between sentences or phrases as he paced the room, looking at the floor, a mannerism quite strange. "Very articulate. I left liking him, greatly impressed with his flash of mind, but rather disturbed by the flow of words." Later, after spending more time in his company, Lilienthal gushed, "He is worth living a lifetime just to know that mankind has been able to produce such a being."